I'm joined this morning by John T. Horner, a professor of astrophysics at the University of Southern Queensland, to discuss Hawking a little bit more. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem. It's good to talk to you again.
So I know you said that a lot of your colleagues were directly inspired by Stephen Hawking to become astrophysicists. What kind of set him apart?
I think it was really, for me, the impact of the incredible book he published. We're going back to when I was just 10 years old, back to 1988 here. And he published a book called A Brief History of Time, which some of the listeners will have heard of. It was a bestseller for 20 years. It's an incredibly successful book. And I think what was revelatory was that it was a book that took topics that a lot of people either find really challenging or will instinctively kind of think, oh, well, that's boring, I'm not interested, it's complicated and tedious. And he made them engaging and exciting, and he really captured the public's imagination writing about space-time and black holes and the origin of the universe and its eventual fate. And he did it in a way that it made science cool, it made cosmology cool. And that really gripped people and excited people. I think that is probably the best legacy anyone can have. Yes, it's great that people do great science and discover things, but if you only report it to your peers, that's useful and beneficial. But to have an impact that goes beyond that to the wider culture, to people who aren't directly working with you, I think that's far more important. I think that's probably his most important legacy, in all honesty.
In that sense, he joins the ranks of people like Richard Feynman and, I guess even Einstein, who kind of like, you know, captured it, the imagination of the public in a lot of ways. Why do you think it's so difficult to, you know, or how do you think he got this across in such an approachable way? How do you make it accessible to people?
I think there's a certain amount of just natural skill there. Some people are better communicators than others, and it's one of the bugbears for me in the way that we're trained as scientists is that we're trained to do research, but we're not trained to communicate. It's just almost assumed that that'll settle on your shoulders like dandruff. And what that means is that you have that precious few people who are gifted communicators, who are fabulous at spreading the word and explaining what they do and what they understand in language that anyone can understand. But you have a lot of people who don't have those skills and are never, encouraged or trained in a way to acquire them. And things are getting better. But what that means is that when you get someone like Stephen Hawking or Albert Einstein, people who are not just incredible scientists but also great communicators, their value is such that, you know, they're everywhere and they really have a big impact.
And how do you think that public perception of astrophysics maybe has changed, or physics in general has changed over the course of his lifetime? Because, I mean, you know, the Brief History of Time was quite a long time ago. How do you think that we interact with astrophysics? Do we interact with it differently than we ever used to?
That's hard to say. I mean, things have changed so much since he wrote the book. I mean, this came out when I was 10 years old. I was a member of my local astronomy society, and I remember how it inspired people in what was a very low socioeconomic area in the north of England in the bad times when the mines were being shut down. I know it had a great impact. And Stephen Hawking then went on to really become enshrined in culture. You know, he appeared on The Simpsons and The Big Bang Theory. And in a way, kind of normalized the whole idea that scientists are people too, which is really important. So I'd like to think that one of the things that has changed and is changing is this perception that science and astrophysics is just people in lab coats sat in a lab isolated from the world. I think one big change that's happening now and is long, long overdue is the realization that science, in particular astrophysics and physics, is not just white male. You know, because one of the big problems we have is that if you see someone talking science, like me talking to you on the phone at the minute, you know, I'm Caucasian male. And getting across the fact that science is inclusive, that we have incredibly gifted female scientists, incredibly gifted people from different cultures and different backgrounds, is one of the big changes that's happened over the last decade. And to some degree, I guess Stephen Hawking did feed into that with his very visible challenges that he had thanks to the illness that he had. You know, the idea that you didn't have to at least be fully mobile and fully physically capable in a traditional sense to achieve all these things was really probably very inspiring as well to people.
Right. And I think even just beyond the you know, inspiration, making it accessible to people, as an astrophysicist yourself, can you explain maybe a little bit about what Stephen Hawking meant to physics as well, like the actual, you know, our knowledge and understanding of the universe?
Absolutely. I mean, he did a lot of work in fields of cosmology and general relativity, quantum mechanics, things like this. Now, they're a bit different from the research I do day to day. So there are other people in the astronomy community who are probably better qualified to talk about the intricacies. But the biggest contribution to me in terms of our understanding of objects in the galaxy and objects in the universe was the idea of what is now known as Hawking radiation. Prior to Stephen Hawking coming up with this idea and developing this theory along with a couple of other people, people essentially thought that once something fell into a black hole, once a black hole devoured something, that was it. In other words, the only thing that could happen to black holes was that they could grow, that they could gain mass, so long as they had food to devour. They would never lose mass and shrink again. And this is where Stephen Hawking brought together cosmology, so the study of the universe as a whole, and quantum mechanics, so the study of the universe on the very smallest scales. And he realized essentially that the space that we imagine is empty is actually a seething sea of very short-lived particles bursting out of the ether, essentially, and then disappearing again. Pairs of positive and negative particles appearing and then re-annihilating a tiny, tiny period of time later. And that is now very well established. But he took the idea one step further and said, what happens if you have a situation where one of these pairs of particles appears right next to the edge of a black hole? Well, you could get one of them falling into the black hole, which means the other would have nothing to collide with and destroy. So it escapes. What we would see, looking at that black hole then, is a particle escaping from the black hole. In other words, the black hole would lose mass.
Right.
And that is something that has helped explain, among other things, why black holes from the birth of the universe that are really tiny, black holes the mass of the Earth, the black holes the mass of you and me, aren't around anymore because they've evaporated. They've lost so much mass they've disappeared back into nothingness.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Jonty, for sharing us a little bit about, you know, your experience and other people's experience with Stephen Hawking's life. Definitely, you know, big inspiration to me in my own physics, though I never really went into astronomy as much. But definitely, you know, really inspirational figure. Thank you very much, Jonty, for joining us this morning.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.